and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight as the weather where I'm at is no longer warmer. It is now cooler, and it's going to be cold for the next week or so, along with probably a little bit of that white powdery stuff mixed in here and there. So some people's going to get more than what we are. Tough luck's all I can say. But anyway, glad you're here with us tonight. Chat room filling up real nice, and we're glad everybody is taking the time to be with us. We've got a great guest tonight and going to a great topic. So sit back, get your coffee or hot chocolate or whatever else you might have to drink, and join us. And we want to thank everybody that's here tonight listening, and those from around the world. We want to thank you because we get listeners from everywhere. If you are listening from somewhere else and you'd like to come over with us, feel free to come over to para-x.com, click on the live chat button and be in with all these wonderful people. And you can interact with them and interact with us. And if you do have questions tonight, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, Tonks Cat, or myself, Henry Foister. We will get those answered for you. If you're listening from somewhere else and you have questions, you can still get us a question by sending it to theparanormalview@gmail.com and just put attention question and we will get that answered for you. So, with that, we're glad that everybody's here. As I said, we have a great guest and there's going to be a lot to talk about, so we're not going to take a lot of time. And I believe Kat, you had something before Jeff introduces our guest.
Yeah, so as everyone knows, today is March 11th, which is the 6th anniversary of the great Tohoku earthquake that hit on the northeast side of Japan 6 years ago. So before we started tonight's show, I wanted to stop for a moment for our Japanese family members. We have many Japanese listeners who tune into the show, either live or they listen to the archives. And we just wanted to say that the Paranormal View here, the community here, we support you on this, the 6th anniversary of the Great Tohoku Earthquake and Tsunami. Our hearts are with you as you remember your loved ones and continue each day of your journey. Now, I'm going to say this again, but in Japanese. So, 今夜の番組の前に、私は日本のリスナーファミリーのために一時でいるしたいんです。これはパラノーマルビューたちは東北地方太平洋沖地震6周年を祝います。あなたの 大切な人を思うごめんね、ちょっと難しいんですけど、思えているとき、私たちの心はあなたと一緒です。以上です。Okay, we can continue on.
All right. Was that the earthquake that had the big issue with the nuclear reactor?
Yes, that is the one that has kept the Fukushima Daiichi in lots and lots of problems. And they're still having continual issues. Families that have moved out of Tohoku are now, well, their kids, and they also get a lot of bullying from moving to different parts of the country. It's a very long and complicated thing, but we don't need to get into it. But just know for our Japanese family members that we're with you today.
Yeah,
and before you introduce our guest, we not only have Cat Cloco with us, but we also have Jeffrey Gould with us.
Hello, happy birthday, Alex Kingston and John Barrowman.
With my windows
and we have Barbara Duncan with us.
Somewhere.
It's the street just north of Madison Avenue in South 56.
We do have Barbara Duncan.
In front.
Fall off?
I don't know. I'm looking.
It's too early for the abductions.
Yeah, really.
No, that's not necessary. I just
normally I'm the one that Skype decides to kick off without anybody knowing about it.
Thank you very much.
No?
Trust us. She's around here somewhere.
She's around.
She's around somewhere. Oh, well. I'll get in contact with her here shortly. But why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest for us?
Yes, well, tonight our field investigator for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, our guest tonight is Preston Dennett, who began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986 when he discovered that his family, friends, and coworkers were having dramatic unexplained encounters. Since then, he's interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. Preston is a ghost hunter, paranormal researcher, and with more than 100 articles published on UFOs and the paranormal, he's the author of 18 books. He's appeared on numerous radio and television programs, and he's taught classes on various paranormal subjects, and he lectures across the country. Currently, Preston lives relatively near me in Rosita, California, so being no stranger to online radio, welcome, Preston Bennett.
Hey, thanks very much. Yeah. All right. Appreciate you having me on the show.
We're glad to have you. It's always good to talk about, we always talk different people about different topics, but UFOs is always a favorite subject to talk about. The book has, 10, 11 chapters in it.
He's written 18 books, Henry. To which one are you referring?
Yeah, really.
The one we're talking about tonight.
Which would be?
Inside UFOs.
There you go.
there's a lot of stories that you have in there. How do you get in contact with these people and persuade them to actually tell their stories, because it seems like that some of them were actually afraid and didn't even want anything to or talk about it anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's not always easy. Some are actually excited to have someone to talk to share their stories, and were really wanted other people to know about them. Others never dreamed that, their experience would end up in a book. But I find them all over the place. There's a number of people at my office with a slightly high turnover. One of the stories came from there. It was a lady I worked with actually for quite some time. Her name is Connie Lopez. She did allow me to use her name. And she came into my office one day and into the room where I was working and saw this little statue I was keeping on my desk. I just put it out, really. It was a statue of a little gray alien that somebody had given to me. And she walks in and screams and points at this thing and says, "What is that?" And I asked her, "Well, what do you think it is?" And she says, "Well, I don't know. But I actually saw one of these things. I saw one of these things right after I had my baby boy." And I'm like, "Oh, wow. Well, that's a gray alien. Tell me what you saw." So that's how I got that story. But some people contacted me through the internet, to my website, having read about my research. One guy in the book, the first chapter, he heard me speak down in San Diego. And I was putting up pictures of images of praying mantis type ETs. And that's what he had seen. This is what kind of drew him to the lecture. And he came up to me afterwards and shared his story. So all over the place. Sometimes pure coincidence. I'll be at line at the post office or something. I start talking with them about UFOs. But so it's kind of, since I've been involved in research for about 30 years now, I've got a pretty wide network. It started with my family and friends, and so I get a lot of referrals, actually.
Which is good. I know the first story that you got in the book, I thought it was pretty interesting that it was called invited for a ride. And I tell you, or invited aboard, I guess is what the name of it is. It was pretty interesting how this guy had been friends with the guy that was on a Navy ship. And they'd been friends for a while. And they started talking, and the one guy started telling him about he's been friends with aliens for a long time. And
right,
he goes with them. So before I get started in it, why don't you just give us a rundown on the story, and then we can start asking questions about it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite cases for a number of reasons. It's got a lot of really unusual elements. It's got a great witness, a Navy medic, Navy corpsman. So, yeah, I put it in as the first chapter because it's just a very unusual story and not your typical abduction for sure. He was friends with this guy for a very long time. They were bunkmates, roommates. His friend was a personnel clerk. And comes out of the blue one day saying, yeah, I've been in contact with the aliens since I was a kid. He used to pick me up, you know, from the farm where I grew up, take me to their ship. Have been doing so my whole life. He said that they not only take him to their ship, but he travels with them. He's been to their planet and other planets and all this stuff. Kevin, you know, Kevin Cannon, the guy, the Navy corpsman, is like, what are you talking about? Kevin had always believed in UFOs because he did a report on them when he was a kid at school. But this was a lot to swallow. It was a kind of an unbelievable story. And Kevin was kind of skeptical. But a couple of days later, his friend comes up and says, you know, my friends just took me to your house, my ET friends. And this guy proceeded to describe Kevin's house in detail. Now, mind you, this was impossible. They were out in the middle of the ocean on a Navy ship. And here's his friend describing what the carpet looked like, the car they had, everything, all these details. And here's where it got really strange. The details he was describing, while absolutely accurate, were from the past, about 10 years. That car that he was describing had already been sold. They no longer owned it. So this is completely freaking Kevin out. He doesn't know how to explain it. He's thinking it's his friend, a CIA agent. But even that wouldn't explain it. And his friend's like, no, my friends took me. You know, I saw your house. And but how could you have done it unless you time traveled? And his friend just kind of smiles. And Kevin's like, all right, well, if this is true, then I want to meet your little green friends. And his friend's like, oh, okay. I'll see what I can do. So a couple of days later, his friend pops into the cabin and says, they're here. They're hovering outside. If you go up on the deck, you can see them. And Kevin's like, oh, really? Okay. Still disbelieving. He goes up on deck. It's just a short walk. He's on his lunch hour. It's the middle of the day. And right up, alongside the ship, off to a slight distance, was this massive, massive craft. So it was kind of a crystal-shaped or diamond-shaped. It was covered with colored lights. It was stunningly beautiful. Had just absolutely huge, about three times larger than the ship or more. And he just could not believe his eyes. He quickly ran over and started shaking someone else's shoulder, the mess cook there who was on the deck talking to someone else. He's like, Tony, look at this thing. Could not get this guy's attention. And the next thing he knows, Kevin is no longer on the Navy ship. He's looking down at it from inside the UFO. And it just got stranger and stranger from this point. He could see through the side of the UFO as if there was a window, but there wasn't. It would become transparent wherever he looked. And he watches the Navy ship recede into a tiny little dot. And he's presumably going out into outer space. He's completely terrified. He pinches his hand to the point where he actually bleeds. He's too afraid to look around. He's just staring outside. He looks down. He sees that he's standing on a metal grate. He said, kind of like a fire escape. And the next thing he knows, He is in his hometown in Kankakee, Illinois, hovering over where his mom worked, the church schoolyard. And he could see his mom actually through the UFO into the side of the building and into the room where his mom is teaching, and she's writing on the blackboard. And a second later, zoom, he's about 2 miles away, three, and he's over the bank building where his dad works. And again, he can see through the side of the UFO, through the building, he can see through the electrical work and the construction and the air ducts and everything to the very center of the building where his dad is sitting at a desk. And this is when the ETs start speaking with him. And they tell him telepathically, your parents have done a good job. They're very good people and very honorable people. And Kevin's thinking to himself, you know, why are you telling me this? What is going on? I want to go home. He's still really frightened at this point. Next thing he knows, there's another shift. He says he may have forgotten some of this because a lot of stuff was happening. Bam, 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 all at once. And next thing he knows, he's at their home, and it's many years in the past. He sees his aunt, who is deceased. He sees himself as a little kid, and there's another shift. He's looking down now through the bottom of the UFO at this desert landscape, and he's really confused because he sees craters and gray sand, and he's thinking, you know, this looks like the moon. And he's like trying to figure this out when suddenly they come up over the horizon, and he sees it is the moon because there's the Earth. Off in the distance, it's the size of a softball, it's tiny. And he's at that point, he says he just nearly lost it. He nearly messed his pants. He didn't use those words. But he was absolutely floored by this and finally got the courage to start speaking to the ETs and ask them, you know, who are you? And where do you come from? And at that moment, the room began to expand into this very large chamber, and it turned into a star chart, a three-dimensional star chart. You could see our solar system, you could see the Earth, Mars, our sun, and lots of stars, and way, way off in the distance on the other side of the room was this tiny little red light that was blinking brightly on and off. And they said, that's where we come from.
Little you are here signs to continue.
Right, right. So this started a whole conversation between he and apparently there was three of them because he could hear three different voices. They were all male. They spoke perfect English and proceeded to tell him all kinds of information, answering his questions literally as fast as he could think them. He asked what they ate, and they said, you know, normal things, fruit, vegetables, fish. They told him that they speak all the languages on Earth, that they've been studying us for a very, very long time, but started paying much closer attention when we started exploding atomic bombs. They said, actually, this caused a lot of ET races to pay closer attention to us, and that a number of these races are currently observing Earth very closely. They told him that they are working with all of the major Earth governments on trading technology and are in diplomatic relations with them. They told him that when we started exploding atomic bombs, it started down a countdown clock. They didn't explain exactly what they meant by that, but just said that your destiny will be fulfilled. He asked them about God, and they refused to discuss it and told him that we will not discuss religion, politics, or race, which is, if you think about it, kind of interesting considering, you know, how controversial those topics are, you know, right now, causing us all kinds of problems with our society. So they wouldn't discuss that, but they took him to the side of the UFO and started to show, like a window opens up, and they showed him, as if he was there, all these disasters that they said were in the future and were going to happen, and proceeded to show him earthquakes and hurricanes, tornadoes, mudslides. They showed him even mining disasters, at least a couple of which he remembers seeing on the news after this experience. So this completely freaked him out. He was absolutely kind of at his wit's end at this point. Finally asks them, well, what do you look like? And they said, well, we're not little and we're not green. he said, well, what do you look like? He says, well, our appearance, you might find it frightening. A lot of people find our experiences frightening, our appearance. And finally, he just turns around and sees them. And they're sitting on these three very large, what looked like white marble chairs or thrones. And these chairs kind of swivel around and face him. They've got huge backrests and big armrests. And sitting on each one of these is a giant praying mantis. Yeah, this just sent him over the edge. So these were not small. These guys were at least 15 feet tall. He's absolutely certain his estimate is correct, because one actually at some point walked right up to him, and it was taller than a basketball hoop is how he described it. He said that they were all milky white in color, had long, thin limbs, a thin body. He didn't see their feet. He was too distracted. He saw their hands, which he said were kind of roundish and crab-like. He saw their face. It looked very much like a praying mantis with a proboscis and a tiny little kind of nose, bump for a nose. But what really most impressed him were their eyes and their head. So their head was absolutely massive. Couldn't believe how large their head was. And their eyes alone were about the size of a basketball. So he was just floored by this. One of them stands up and two steps comes across the room, which had shrunk back down to size now. So this is something I've heard in other cases. The rooms will actually change size. And that's what he reported. It's one of the kind of red flags that I knew that this guy was probably not making this up. And I could tell by the sincerity in his eyes and the emotional quaver in his voice each time he speaks about it, that this affected him very deeply. Because at this point, one of these figures runs up and it's fussing with the dials. There was a console there. It said it was kind of long and against the wall and higher than it would be comfortable for a human. It was their size and had only a few colored lights on it, amber, orange, red, yellow, and some dials, what looked like oven dials. And one of these guys walks over there, starts fussing with the dials, turns to him. He's right next to it now. And he's looking up at it and it says, would you like to go to our planet? He's like, no. I don't know how I would have reacted. I like to think I would have said yes, but I'm not being confronted by a 15-foot tall praying mantis. So he says no. And at this point, it reaches out and grabs him by the shoulder. And that was all he could consciously handle. He let out a scream of utter terror and fainted. And next thing he knows, he's waking up. He's back on his Navy ship, not on the deck, where he left from, but in his bunk, in his bed. And he's lying there screaming. He's covered in sweat. He stops screaming and gathers his wits when his friend, who was the contactee, whips the curtain open and gives him a kind of a grin and says, so, how did you like your ride?
It's like, you really embarrassed me in front of my friends.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Kevin was not happy. He ultimately, at that point, was very frightened by the whole experience and was very angry at his friend and bounded out of the room and actually never really talked to him again. They fell out of friendship and never saw each other again.
Oh.
Yeah, and here's another weird thing, and this is something I've heard many times, is immediately following this experience and in the days that followed, more and more of it left his mind. All he really remembered afterwards was being taken on board and a few scattered images here and there. He didn't remember what they looked like. He didn't remember what they told him or anything like this. It was all kind of in this shroud of amnesia. But afterwards, he was at home. This was, a couple of years later. He was no longer in the service at this time. He's now retired. And he sees, he's watching a nature show with his wife.
Oh, no.
He sees a praying mantis.
And it kind of brings it back.
It sure does. This is what I call a cue. I've seen this in many other cases. Not all people have to go under hypnosis to recall what happened, and he sure didn't. This wall of amnesia came crumbling down, and over the next few minutes, sitting there shaking as it all comes tumbling into his mind. And it's almost as if he always knew it was there. He just kind of refused to think about it. He had various ways to describe it, but for the first time, he kind of finally accepted it, and he remembered it all.
So it's almost like the memory was partitioned off, and the sight of the mantis just ripped the wall open.
Exactly. It's exactly what happened. This has happened to people who saw Whitley Strieber's book, the cover of it.
A communion, yeah.
That broke some people's amnesia. I've talked to people who had that happen. Another guy I talked to, he bit on his wisdom tooth when he was an adult, and boom, he remembers his mouth being operated on by ETs when he was a little kid. He had missing time.
Hmm.
So little things like this can break down the amnesia. And that's what happened to Kevin. He's really gung-ho about talking about his experience. I've interviewed him many times.
Did he give you his former friend's name and how to reach him?
He did. He did not how to reach him. Was not able to get a hold of him, and have had very, bad experiences contacting people out of the blue.
Oh.
Who have had not only not only abductions, but just sightings. I've been hung up on and been cussed out. Generally speaking, I don't call people, cold call them, if I know they've had an experience, unless I can get a referral from someone who they know.
Right.
But his experience was so unusual, I had to give it a try. Could not find him. I didn't do a private investigative. I didn't go to the point where I hired a private investigator to find him, because these days, you can track pretty much anyone down.
I noticed that there's a lot of the aliens that looks like the praying mantis type.
Oh, yeah. It's the second most common type I get. The first common by far is grays, or some variation of the grays, including hybrids in that. Any figure that looks, with grayish skin or pale skin, very large eyes and bald head, and that sort of appearance is the most common praying mantis in second.
I always thought reptilians would be up there right beyond grays. I didn't know about the mantises.
I don't get a whole lot of reptilians. I've certainly talked to people who've had them, but I haven't had people come to me saying, not a whole lot, some.
Isn't the reptilian supposed to be like a bad species?
For the most part, but that's not necessarily true. I've talked to at least four cases I can think of right offhand where people had positive experiences. One which was actually very intimate, amorous, if you know what I mean.
Whoa!
Some are actually friendly. But
takes that hug between Kirk and the Gorn to a whole new level.
Yeah, it does. The Gorn, actually, it's a very good likeness, I think, of some of these reptilians.
That's what I always figured. Whenever I started reading about the reptilians, like, oh, it's just a Gorn.
I kind of wonder. Star Trek actually had quite a number of things that were right about the whole UFO field. The technology, where you beam someone aboard instantly, or the instant healing technology, mm-hmm. and the humanoid form. That seems to be very common in the whole.
You mean like the Nordic, what are called the Nordics?
Doesn't matter. You don't get aliens that look like, octopuses or what have you. They're mostly humanoid. And I'll say that even to the point of robotic creatures often will be described as having metal robots, as having legs, arms, even, eye holes or a mouth place. Very anthropomorphic, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, there's so many theories that alien species essentially planted or seeded the Earth with early hominids that eventually became like us.
Right, which I think that's probably, there's some validity to that. We look so much like them, they look so much like us. Even the Nordics, let's face it, look almost exactly like us.
Yeah, pretty just much. A little taller.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, better looking.
yeah, a little more GQ and a little more runway.
Very muscular, generally speaking.
Barbara, you got questions on this one?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment.
I always thought that the Nordics were up there as far as the grays go in reports, but I could apparently.
Yeah, because in the Travis Walton experience, they were a combination of grays and Nordics.
Oh, yeah, I get that. There's a case like that in the book. I think the grays, I'm guessing here, I have only the stories that people have told me, but I'm guessing that the grays are kind of, I don't want to say subservient, but maybe lower on the hierarchy.
A lot of people figure they're either like scientists or almost like bee drone workers.
Right. My guess is they're humanoid like us, and they're interbreeding with us. They've said many times to various abductees that we are you, you are us, we come from your future, you're one of us, or some variation of that. And certainly the Nordics look like us, so I'm thinking they're probably, just different type of humanoid, but are related to us in some way, as the Nordics clearly are. I mean, if they look just like us.
Well, considering their eyes, it's almost like they would be an underground species, almost like Morlocks.
Yeah, well, that's the story. I mean, the story coming from multiple independent stories or independent witnesses is that there was some sort of a war or disaster on their planet, and they received an enormous amount of genetic damage over a number of generations and were forced to go underground. And one group bred out their emotions, so they became largely emotionless, while another did not. So it's kind of interesting. We're still kind of at the speculative stage at this point, but when you start hearing the same stories from different people who don't know each other, they're like, wow, this is strange.
Well,
that's like corroboration from independent people who have no idea what the other's going to say.
Oh, yeah, like that weird detail where Kevin's describing this room expanding and contracting. That's a detail most people don't know about.
I know that in Travis Walton again, he was in like a control room, and the walls seemed to it didn't indicate it was like expanding, but it was like they faded, like the lights had gone down, and then it became like a star field.
Right. Yeah,
some of these different walls. Yeah.
Some of these screens, I think, are so advanced. The pixelation, I guess, is
like a holodeck.
Right. It looks absolutely real. And people can't tell whether they're looking out a window or watching a movie. Generally, they think they're actually there. That's how vivid it is.
Well, I find it interesting that just like when he went up on deck and seen the ship and then seen that there was other seamen on board on the deck, and none of them noticed it. I assume that nobody in the Cunning Tower or anything like that saw it either. You wonder how the aliens can block it to where only certain people can see them.
Yeah, he asked about that. And they told him, there can be a crowd of people, and we choose who we want to see us. They told him the Roswell crash did actually happen. He keeps coming up with little memories and bits. And so it took a number of interviews for me to get the whole story from him. But he did actually mention that as well.
Did he indicate that the occupants of the Roswell craft, if any survived and were being kept somewhere?
No, at least, I don't believe so. I would have to ask him to get all the details on that, but I don't think so. He was very shook up the entire time and had a real difficult time the entire time he was on board. It says it was a good couple of hours at least. He was afraid at one point. He's like, I'm AWOL. And they're like, no, they don't even know you're gone. He's like, well, why did you take me? And they're like, well, isn't this what you wanted? That's what they told him. And it was. He regretted it immediately. He regretted it the second he saw this thing hovering over the Navy ship.
Well, our time, just run right on up to for us to take a break. I think we'll wait before we start the next story and talk some about it. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. Let's see. I want to remind you, if you do have questions, private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, Tonks Cat, or myself, Henry Foister. We will get those answered. And if you're listening from somewhere else and you got questions, please send them over to theparanormalview@gmail.com, and we will get those and get them answered for you. And by the way, there's other ways to contact us, and we forgot to mention that, didn't we, Kat?
Yeah, we did. So you can also tweet your questions over to us at Paraview Radio on Twitter. Of course, we have the email, and also on Facebook, which is facebook.com/theparanormalview, all one phrase.
Right. So with that, let's see. Barbara's still not doing anything yet. So let's see.
She's doing battle with people.
Yeah. We're gonna let Jeff take us out, and Kat will bring us back. How does it sound?
Cool. Okay. Well, you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Kat Kloko, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest, ufologist and paranormal investigator, Preston Dennett. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
From the author of the Ghost of Hollywood series and Workplace Spells comes a book for all lovers of pets, Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. Learn how to choose your next pet according to their astrological sign. Explore animal superstitions. Learn 25 magic spells for your pets and get instructions on creating your own spells. Learn who to call upon and what to use to cast these spells. Include special chapters by Reverend Tim Shaw, Psychic to the Stars Kenny Kingston, Psychic Medium Victoria Gross, Animal Communicator Dinah Roseberry, and Shaman Willie Windwalker Gibson. This is the perfect book for all animal lovers. Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. For details on how to get your copy of this amazing new book, go to www.schifferbooks.com or check out Marla Brooks online at www.marlabrooks.com. This would make the perfect gift for the animal lover in your life. Go to www.schifferbooks.com or ask about it at your local bookstore.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk-time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship.com. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
So, Tim,
Around here at Para X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, little sis. No, not the Who. The Shock.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using the spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Right. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Para-X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para-X Soho.
Para-X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back to the Paranormal View. This is Kat Cloco, and our other hosts are Henry Foyser, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. And our guest tonight is Preston Dennett, and we're talking about his new book, Inside UFOs, True Counts of Contact. Hi, everyone. Oh, no.
Yeah, we're not talking.
No. It's all you. It's all good tonight.
Scared me for it.
Barbara, we have listeners all around the world, don't we?
We sure do, Henry. Tonight they're coming in from the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Singapore, Canada, Germany, Puerto Rico just hopped in, and Unknown is back.
Wow. They're just, I still think some of them people just live listening from one of them bases on the dark side of the moon. Could be some of those terrestrials, though, aliens.
You know there's a distinction between far side of the moon and dark side of the moon, right?
No, not really.
Okay, far side of the moon is always the far side of the moon. The dark side of the moon isn't the far side of the moon because the moon always faces us in one direction as it orbits.
Actually, it does gently rotate, but
gently,
it takes hundreds of years. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the dark side of the Earth.
Exactly.
Wow, we got a dark side?
Well, yeah.
The side that isn't facing the sun, yeah.
Oh, we got a dark side here. Welcome back, everybody, to Paranormal View. We got some others that we want to talk about, and I understand we're getting some questions coming in from the chat room also, which what Kat was saying that one of the questions is about. Also deals some with the second story that you have in there, Taylor's extraterrestrial friends. I believe it was either on him or it was on the next story, and I can't remember which one it was. But anyway, what was the question that we have from the chat room?
Well, our chat room kind of ate it, being that I can't scroll up to read it anymore. Uh-oh. But it came from Nyla, and she reports, I'm going to try my best here, Nyla. Okay. That she saw a type of image up on the wall of her bedroom in broad daylight on the weekend, and it looked like it was a TV image, but it was of two lights and a gray bending its head to the side to look at you. And she was wondering about hypnosis, and it seems to be effective to recalling alien contact.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great tool. I don't generally recommend it unless someone's got a very clear reason to do it. If they've had, you know, a clear-cut case of missing time, if they're really gung-ho about knowing about what happened to them, if they've got perhaps some anxiety disorders as a result of a UFO encounter, this sort of thing. Yeah. I know it.
I don't think she's had missing time that I know of, but she's told me forever about the image that she's seen. It was up in the corner, and it was like there was a hole there, and they were just kind of peeking around, looking out through the hole at her in the bedroom. So,
right, they do that. They can travel interdimensionally. They can kind of appear quasi physical, transparent, and just kind of peek in into our reality, if you will, and take a look at what's going on. This can also represent sometimes a memory, a sort of an ab reaction, a reliving of an event that you don't remember aboard a UFO. That happens all the time. I mean, that happens to, you know, survivors of war, post-traumatic stress survivors will sort of have images come right at them, which look like they're really happening at that time, but are actually just a memory. So that's a possibility. It would depend if, you know, you've had a close-up encounter with a UFO. That's a very good sign that's possibly, and if it's really close, that it was more than just a sighting.
Well, do some people block that out because of the fear of it, or are the aliens actually some way or another blocking it out?
Well, I think probably both is a factor, but it's my assessment that this is the ETs doing it, probably for a couple of different reasons, partly to, you know, cover their tracks, but ultimately to protect the witness, I think, and have this come. 'Cause often they'll say during their experience, you know, you will remember in time, or you will forget this for now, you know, implying that, yes, you're going to remember this at some point. So, yeah, I think that I find that very interesting. And I know hypnosis works. I know Yvonne Smith and Barbara Lamb, and so I've met Bud Hopkins and other people who have done regressive hypnosis. I generally don't do it. I will refer people if I feel like, you know, they really want to or it's helpful. But you have to remember you're opening up a can of worms.
Right, because no telling what it could actually be. It could be something you didn't want to remember.
Right, and probably more. I mean, it might not be just that experience.
Yeah.
It might be experiences going into your childhood. And other people have told me, no, I had the, yeah, I went under hypnosis and I remembered it. And they feel a little disappointed because it's a little different than, say, a waking memory or when you remember it spontaneously through meditation or a cue or even dreams.
Well,
I just want to note something that Patsy's, that event that she described to you, Henry.
Yeah.
It sounds something that is right out of Doctor Who. I think Jeff will agree with me here. It's quite an Amy Pond moment.
Which episode?
Oh, I can't tell you which episode it is, but it's one of the, it was with Amy Pond when she was pregnant.
Oh, yes. She was, she was replaced by the Flesh.
Yeah. But that entire saga.
Well, I was thinking also on the one hand, because you indicated that they can clearly travel back in time, why there's missing time at all. If they take somebody and can spend a weekend, you know, checking them out, experimenting, taking them back to their home planet for a picnic or whatever, and then bring them back with no time passed, how is it that so many abductees have missing time.
Right? There's something weird going on for sure. They're all about controlling time and space. I mean, here we are. They have the ability to control the size of the UFO they're on. They can shrink it down to a little golf ball. They can shrink people down.
Well, that's transcendental dimensionalism, and Kat and I both know about that. That's TARDIS Gallifreyan technology.
So, I mean, they can control time to a degree, and they don't always use it. I mean, there's lots of weird contradictions in this. I've got another case involving not time travel, but I guess you'd call it stopping time in the book.
I think that's the...
That's the second chapter, yeah. Taylor's...
Second chapter, Taylor's Extraterrestrial Friends. And that's what we're going to talk about next. If you want to go ahead and... Because that's one of your longer chapters in the book. But there's a lot to it. I mean, it started out when he was like 11 years old and goes right on up to when he's 70 or older. So... won't you tell us a little bit about that one, and then we'll start asking a bunch of questions.
Yeah, really nice guy. He's actually a chiropractor. He did not want me to use his name. But when he was 11 years old, this was sometime back in St. Louis, Missouri, his mom sent him out to mail a letter at the local store, which was, you know, 2-3 blocks away. The store was about to close. They knew exactly what time it was, 9 o'clock. He got there before the store closed, mailed the letter, and was walking back. And suddenly he notices, well, what you call the Oz factor is what we call it now. It was strangely silent all around him. There were no cars on this really busy street, which should have been impossible. He looks up and sees hovering right over the building. You know, he's walking down the sidewalk, right over maybe a 3-story building, was a huge, huge metal craft of some kind. He hadn't really thought about UFOs at all, so wasn't really sure what he was looking at, though the word mothership kind of came into his mind very strongly. And it sends down this beam of light or this flash of light. And next thing he knows, it's not 9 o'clock anymore, it's closer to 10. He's still in the same spot. He runs home. He feels very different. He feels as if a veil has been lifted from his mind. He feels super aware, much smarter, lighter on his feet. He feels amazing, absolutely transformed and enlightened in a way that he just really had a lot of trouble describing. You know, I had to laugh when he was describing this because I've heard this before too. People become, one guy told me as a UFO was hovering over him, he was more aware than he had ever been in his entire life. And that was probably one of the clearer descriptions I've heard of what Taylor was trying to describe here. He felt absolutely mentally enhanced. Runs home and is really excited. His mom's furious. You know, he's 11 years old and it's like 10 o'clock. So she's really upset. He did not tell her what happened. Did not know how to explain it. Could not account for the missing time. So just kept quiet. And here's where it got interesting. A couple of days, you know, after this experience, he spontaneously started to recall. Over the next week or so, he remembered quite a bit. He remembered he was walking down the sidewalk. This thing hovers over, sends up a beam of light. Next thing he knows, he's inside this thing. It's very clean. It's, you know, bright colors. It looks really nice. And there are two men standing next to him. And the expression on their faces was one of absolute love and acceptance and enlightenment and knowledge. He almost gives kind of an angelic feel to them, he said, as if they were perfect, enlightened human beings. They were absolutely beautiful. Two men, could have been brothers or even twins, not exactly alike, but very close. And both were muscular, had tanned complexions, very good looking, and were wearing tight black jumpsuits with like a white stripe, something like that. And he proceeded to have this long conversation with them, a very deep philosophic conversation during which they shared all kinds of knowledge with him. And unfortunately, he doesn't remember what they said, but he remembers talking with them certainly, and just felt like he had made this incredible connection with these guys.
Like you say, he doesn't remember yet.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting because following that, you know, he had been doing very poorly in school, and his mom switched him into a different school. They moved out into the country, and they thought, you know, he started to do much better in school. Right, rose right to the top of the class and actually stayed there. Became very good at school. Took him very little effort, and they thought, oh, it's because, you know, we moved. But no, that's not why. It was, he knew why. It was because of these UFO guys. And following that, they started to see quite a bit of UFOs over their farm there. This is outside of St. Louis. And had UFO sightings regularly. He would often go out into the pond behind the house to this secluded area and would have encounters there, which he only partially remembers. They would often start with a screen memory. He'd see this, what he thought was a deer. And he'd be staring at it and realize, no, that's not a deer. He had the ability to kind of break through some of these screen memories, but was never quite able to recall what happened during his missing time episodes, of which there were quite a number. One very bizarre incident, and this is what I mentioned earlier, he and the entire family were outside when this classic flying saucer was swooping down and hovers just a few hundred feet away. It's metallic, it's saucer-shaped, it's got lights on it. This is the middle of the day. And everyone's like running around screaming and pointing and going, oh my God, look at this thing. It's, you know, one of the closest sightings they've ever had. They've had a number of sightings. But this thing is clearly, you know, targeting them, looking at them. Well, Taylor decides to run inside and get his shotgun. He's not going to shoot them. That's not his intention at all. But the shotgun has a scope on it, which, you know, allows him to see things much closer. So he runs inside and gets the shotgun and looks, sees the UFO. It's still there. The whole family's looking at it. Lifts up the scope and can't find the UFO. He's like, well, that's weird. Puts the gun down, and the UFO is gone. He's like, what is going on? And he looks over at his family, and his mom is frozen in place. And his dad is frozen in place, and he's holding a bucket of, you know, milk or water. And it's splashing over the edge. And he can, you know, the drops are frozen in place. His whole family is frozen. But here's, you know, and I don't understand this. He's not. He's like running around. He's like, oh my God, beginning to panic, turns to the side in the front of the house and sees that the UFO has now landed. It's right there in the front yard. And ETs are coming out of this doorway and walking down the driveway towards him. And that just kind of fills him with a lot of anxiety. I still feel like these guys have not hurt him in any way. He calls them his friends. He feels a very close connection to them. But at the same time, he feels a lot of fear sometimes. And this was one of those times. And as they got real close to him, typical grays, he said, wearing jumpsuits, he could not remember anything else. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But he went on and on through through his life, seeing UFOs, lights, communicating with them.
Oh yeah, yeah. They started coming into his house. He would talk to them, like you and me talk. I mean, actual conversations, which I have to tell you is pretty unusual.
Apparently, he had been abducted into a spaceship quite a few times, and they kept putting implants in him.
Yes. Yeah. He lost one when he was a child. He remembered it. It was like something metallic fell out of his nose. He's like, that's weird. They're not going to be able to find me now. Doesn't know why he said that, but yeah, they kept putting implants in him. And one time there's this kind of mark on his cheek, a little boil. And it was really bothering him. His wife saw it. You know, I talked to her about it, talked to him. And she's kind of joking, you know, maybe it's an implant. Or no, he did. He's joking. You know, maybe it's an implant. Next night, the ETs take him, you know, and boy, they're upset. they're basically lecturing him. Says, how could you? I can't believe this. This is ridiculous. How many? We've lost so many implants with you. Why'd you have to go and mess around with this one? And he's like, oh, you know, that's an implant. And they're like, of course it is. He says, well, don't worry about it. You know, I won't take it out. leave it there. And they're like, no, no, now that you remembered it, it's a problem and we can't have this. And they take it out and they said, and we're putting another one in and we're going to put it in a place you'll never find it. I'm like, oh, really? Right?
No sun shining around that implant.
So that was kind of interesting. And he had a number of experiences like this. One time
Has anyone had any problem going through TSA checkpoints with implants?
No, I have not had anyone complain about that. I have had people go to the doctors, and boy, the doctors get really upset. One lady, she had been healed by ETs and of a cyst, and they're looking at her. You know, she was going to the doctor to have it removed, and she came to have it, you know, more tests, and they're like really upset because not only could they not find the cyst, there was evidence of surgery. There was laser marks. There was fluid in one of her tubes that is only present after surgery has been performed. And they accuse her, you know, you had surgery. She says, no, I didn't. No. So, yeah, people have had problems with doctors. Not so much TSA agents, though.
I have a quick, short story. So last week, my husband and I returned home from Las Vegas, and we're going through the TSA checkpoint. And for some reason, something on his chest kept lighting up the metal detector, but he wasn't wearing anything that had metal on it. So yeah. We don't know what it was. Because he went through the detector, and it detected it, and they hand-wanded him and then patted him down. And we're just like, okay, I have no idea why this happened. We just went on our merry little way. They let us go, but strange.
Yeah, a number of witnesses feel like they do have implants, and when they go to the doctor, they're diagnosed with foreign bodies in their brain or in their sinuses. And there's a number of cases like that in the book. One lady has a metallic ring in her lung, and the doctors have no idea how it could get there. It's absolutely impossible. But she knows. I mean, she has a strong suspicion.
So we have a quick question from chat. Were you going to ask it, Barbara?
Yeah, because I had a twist to it, which is, if you recall, there was an episode of X-Files where Dana Scully had her implant removed. She took it to a supermarket and by luck just sort of ran it across the scanner. And other people were asking, like, microchip readers in vets' offices, couldn't they just take them to somewhere to see if they could be read?
Ooh. Yeah, there has been some very interesting research on implants. In fact, it's probably closest to the smoking gun that we've got of actual proof of ET visitation. Not that the evidence isn't out there.
That or reverse engineering.
That's true. I mean, we don't know for sure, do we? But we've got thousands of landing trace cases. We've got enough radar return cases and photo cases and multiple eyewitness testimonies and government documents and animal evidence and healings and injuries. I mean, the evidence for this stuff is out there. It's practically conclusive, and the implant evidence is incredible. It's been largely led by the late Dr. Roger Lear, whom I knew well, and have talked with some of his clients who have had their implants removed. One of them was the subject in one of my books. Right after she had her implant removed, the ETs came right back and put it back in. But yeah, these implants have some amazing properties. First of all, there's no foreign body reaction. You know, normally when there's, you know, shrapnel or what have you in someone's body, it's surrounded by calcium or whatever to push the foreign body out. It becomes infected. But that's not what's happening in these cases. A lot of these implants look identical. Some appear to be biologically based and disappear. Others are metallic, in fact have elements of meteoritic iron in them, which is very hard to explain. Most don't have entry wounds. A number of people can remember these actually being put inside their bodies. A lot of them look exactly identical, like a cantaloupe seed. And there's a few of them that are magnetic, and a few that have actually been tested and shown to be giving off electromagnetic signals of some kind. So, yeah, we haven't heard the last about implants. It's the cutting edge of UFO research. That Disclosure, crashed UFOs, and I think onboard experiences is where we're hitting the most pay dirt right now.
I guess those implants must be monitored by the aliens really closely for them to come right back down saying, hey, you had it removed, here's a new one, and just stick in a new one when one has been removed either by accident or a doctor has removed it, sort of like, oh, at least you kept a receipt, you know, and they give them a new one. So they must be having almost NSA level watching, like, oh, where are they today?
Right. Oh, no, the NSA has nothing on them. These guys monitor everything.
Well, I mean, I'm looking for it right now, but our friend Shara, who was on our show a few months ago for our listeners who remember, she lives in India and is very involved with the UFO groups in India. And she sent me a number of photos of a metallic object found in a woman who came to her group for help, and they think it's a tracking device. So, and there's x-rays and everything of it. I'm looking at the photos right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure these things are tracking devices because they're removed and the ET still find them. Perhaps that's one of their functions.
Mm-hmm.
And another speculation has been mind control, but I have to tell you, I've got 4 or 5 cases and I've read several cases in widely varying places where the ETs have told people that the reason for the implants is to monitor their health level. It's usually some variation of that, to boost their immune system, to monitor the levels of pollution, this sort of thing.
And is the aliens told the people that they put the implants in the reason that they're putting them in them?
Yep. Just yep, that's exactly
what
the reason.
What you were saying.
At first, I was thinking, why didn't they just give them a Fitbit? But I mean, if at least they're, you know, if it's actually doing health improvement, that's good as well.
Yeah, well, this is what I've heard, you know, and I've heard this from widely varying sources. I mean, there's cases in England, there's cases all over the place in which people have talked about this. So I don't think, I mean, fear sells, and the most lurid aspects of the whole UFO abduction phenomena have really kind of risen to the surface of the media. But people I talk to don't feel, for the most part, that this is an evil phenomena. They don't feel like the aliens are here to hurt us or to scare us or to take over the world or anything like that. Not that they're here to save us either.
Right.
But there is a sort of a very whole benevolent aspect to this, I think, that's being largely overlooked.
Well, now, the story here with Taylor, the first group of aliens that he was with were the Nordics.
Right.
The others that he seemed to have been watched by or been with were Greys.
Yeah, kind of interesting. And he never saw the Nordics again, not that he remembers, at least, and doesn't know quite what to make of it. But the Greys kept coming back. I mean, he started wondering one night, how do they, you know, carry people in their ships if their ships are turning at right angles like this? How do they do this? And they actually took him on board and showed him, demonstrated, put him in this chair, which he says was clear plastic or like acrylic, obviously made for a human. The top came out of the ceiling and enclosed him in this kind of container, which filled up with liquid, and he was forced to actually breathe this liquid. And they told him, don't be afraid, you can breathe it, just breathe, just breathe. This is how we transport people. And, you know, I have to wonder about this, because when someone's on board a UFO, they're not floating. There's gravity, and it's apparently Earth normal because they're walking around. Usually. Sometimes they are floating. I mean, they're being carried from room to room. But not always. Why they would need to put someone in a chair like that, I'm not sure if that's...
Well, it sounds almost like the liquid that was used in the movie The Abyss in order to deal
right.
with, in this case, gravitational forces as opposed to water pressure.
Right. It's a real thing, by the way. Perfluorocarbons, they're called. Scientists have... are working with these. They can, I'm guessing they can do this with humans, but they've certainly done it with animals, smaller animals, rats and things like this, keeping them in this super oxygenated liquid, which they breathe and can stay alive for, you know, a long time. So we actually have this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually remember years and years ago there was a commercial about the guy who discovered it, and it was done sort of like a narrative commercial where it indicated he had created a liquid in which that nothing happened, and then he's just got the bright idea that nothing would happen, and he like put a television set in it, it didn't go off, and he oxygenated it, and his hamster kept breathing underneath it, and he realized it wasn't that it didn't do anything, it's just that it had properties unlike anything anyone had come across.
Right. Yeah. So I think that I'm not sure that this is what the ETs are doing, but it seems to be related to that because people describe that a number of people have had this experience. And Taylor's experience pretty much sounds very close to what Betty Andreasen described. But a lot of people said, no, this liquid is not normal. It kind of brushes off, doesn't get you wet in the same way. And it's very unusual. So, yeah, he's had some great conversations with these ETs and learned quite a bit about how they do what they do.
Wow. Well, our time is right on up to even past last break. We're going to take a quick little last break. And because there's so much good stuff in the book, we're not going to be able to go through the whole book. So when we come back, Kat and Jeff and Barbara, you can choose which chapter you guys would like to talk about and that you might have a lot of questions on. So we can try and get as much in as we can. We will take a break. I'm going to let Kat's going to, you know, Jeff's going to take us out. And Kat will bring us back again. So anything you guys got before we run off the break?
Nope, we're good.
This is one of those shows where it should be 4 hours instead of two.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, it's a great show. And remember, if you do have questions, private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Jeffrey Gould, Tonks Cat, or myself, Henry Foister, and we will get questions answered for you. And if you're listening from somewhere else and you got questions, send them over to theparanormalview@gmail.com. Attention question, and we will get those answered for you. So with that, Jeff, won't you take us out?
You're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Kat Kloko, Ceiling Cat, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest, author and ufologist Preston Dennett. So stay tuned for more Paranormal View after the break.
Listening at home, at work, or anywhere. Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
I found it at last! Marla's sacred cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream in Gettysburg. You're listening to the Paranormal View on Para-X Radio Network.
My name is Greg Bakken. I'm a writer, a producer, and a paranormal investigator. My favorite way of communicating with spirits is through using a spirit box, also known as a ghost box. I invite you to listen to me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central for interviews with people in the paranormal community and beyond. Plus, I will also include as much of my spirit box evidence as I can during my show.
My name is Greg. Can you say Greg? Can you say Jeff?
Right. Jeff.
Join me every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Time for Minnesota Ghost Box, only on Para-X Radio.
Rat! Rat! Where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett. Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett! 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 Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Line!
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Kloko, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rosalind Bown, and you are listening to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Mysterious and spooky, they all talk gobbledygooky, the Para-X family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Para-X family.
They're strange, deranged, unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew, it's time to rendezvous, as we give awards to the Para-X family.
And we're back to the Paranormal View with our guest, Preston Dennett. And I know we have lots and lots of listener questions. So, Barbara, you said you had one from Patsy?
I do, and it refers back to one of your chapters. You had somebody who had ringing in their ears, and she's wondering if that person had ever been checked for an implant. And my follow-up question is, could those implants actually be causing that ringing just because of the bioelectrical interference?
I think it's a possibility. I've talked to a couple of people at least who feel that that's exactly the case. And we're like, oh, my implant is ringing, you know, which means, this is what this lady told me. And I have to believe her because she actually showed me a UFO. Took me out and showed me one. She says that's when the ETs are communicating with her. She's in very close contact, or was. She's now in Australia. Haven't spoken with her in a while, but yeah, her implant will go off, and she's like, the ETs are communicating. And, some of these implants have been detected by doctors, we were talking about earlier. They're not often diagnosed as, being alien implants, usually as foreign bodies. And, I still don't... I think there's probably a number of different functions for them, and I'm not sure that everyone who has tinnitus, necessarily has an implant.
True.
But I think it's one of the symptoms.
I also wonder. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just saying it's a shame she just can't get it to go to voicemail.
Well, I often wonder if they have this ringing. It's if they start talking about the abductions, then the ringing gets worse.
I have heard that. Yeah, I actually have heard that a couple of times. So, yeah, I think it depends on the witness. People may not, they may have implants and never know. And some people actually, one of the guys in the book, I'm pretty sure he probably has implants. He went to the doctor. They're like, there's this foreign body in your sinuses and, some evidence of surgery here. He doesn't have tinnitus, but he would hear voices in his head of them, the actual ETs talking to him, particularly prior to an experience or abduction. They would say things like, the time is soon, or we are coming, in a chorus of voices, by the way, not just one voice, but an actual chorus of different voices. Another strange detail that I've heard before, but not a lot.
Almost like the Borg collective or something.
Yeah. I think these guys are telepathic, so their sense of individuality is different than ours. And certainly they seem fascinated by that. And when someone jumps up and breaks free from their,
the hive mind, and sort of like, I thought it was going to be me. I was supposed to tell him. No, I was supposed to. do it at once.
One guy, he was taken on board, and they're like, should we, what do we do next? And he says it was very strange because it's like they had to go through this board meeting, just like you said, as if each of them would lift up a sign and they'd say either yes or no for every single decision and movement that they had to do.
Kat, did you say you had another question from the chat room?
Yes, we do. And this one comes from Cy, and he asks, what color beams of light are usually used to freeze or stun people in place?
Great question. These guys know more about light than we do. There's many very unusual qualities about their beams of light and a huge number of things they can do that ours can't. These are not flashlights. These lights can heal people. They can paralyze people. They can render physical objects transparent or not there. They can levitate people. They can burn. They can cause eye damage. They can a whole litany of things that these beams can do. And they come in a lot of different colors. So it's hard to make sense of this. I've seen a number of cases where UFOs are coming zooming down and they turn bright red. And as they zoom away, they're blue. There's possible something with the the redshift, blue shift phenomena.
Yeah, I was going to say, like the Doppler effect.
Right. But what as far as these beams that paralyze people, they're usually white. For the most part, most of the UFO beams are described as white. They're described as being very coherent, like thick, like water almost. They can come down halfway to the ground and not hit the ground. These objects can be extremely bright and cast no shadow. One guy in the book, he's describing the UFOs he saw, and he says it was so strange because these lights were huge, they were massive, they were extremely bright, they were pulsating orange-white, but if you looked slightly to the left or right, they disappeared. They could only be seen when looking directly at them and not visible in your peripheral vision at all. So, yeah, these lights, my gosh, we're learning some of it. We're doing all kinds of things with lasers these days, including levitating and healing people.
That's almost similar to some computer monitors that if you're not sitting directly in front of the monitor, you can't see what's on the screen. From an angle, you can't see what's on the screen.
So we don't know what light is yet. I think that we're going to have some major revolutions to what light actually is. And there's some contactees, Charles Hall, this guy from who wrote Millennial Hospitality, has a completely different photon theory that was given to him by the ETs and actually explains a bunch of errors or misunderstandings in Maxwell's equations. And a whole theme of this with equations and contactees, like Stan Romanek. He started writing all these equations. A lady I talked to, she was like writing all this mathematical stuff that she didn't even understand. So they're trying to teach people this. And that's another theme I think that comes across very strongly in onboard experiences.
Well, I remember reading years ago, there was a guy in South America or something, a hippie, by one of these beams of light. And he had previously lost all his teeth and adult teeth grew back.
Yes, I know the case. Ventura Maceres is his name. He was examined by over 50 people, including government officials, doctors, police officers, UFO investigators. Really remarkable case, involved all kinds of evidence, multiple witnesses. The tops of these eucalyptus trees where we saw this UFO were burned. Eucalyptus trees, by the way, are 100 feet high.
Yeah, that's probably going to tick off the koalas. Oh, wait.
All the fish in the stream that died under mysterious circumstances. His pet cat was missing for like 3 days, or his dog. A lot of unusual. And yeah, after he was hit by this beam of light, had some alarming symptoms, much like radiation sickness, but recovered and started growing a whole new set of teeth. At age like 70 or something, by the way.
Yeah, he was old.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, these beams of light, they're incredible. One kid, he was struck by a beam of light. He had a severe head cold. Sees this UFO hovering over his neighbor's house. This is in Kentucky. And it sends down this beam of light. Plays across the field. Is about to strike him. He turns to run. It paralyzes him in mid-stride. He's leaning at a 45-degree angle and is kind of hovering there as all these mathematical equations fill his head, strange landscapes, bunch of stuff he didn't even understand. And he says it felt like it was hit by a bucket of ice water. It retracts. He falls to the ground, bumps his face, runs inside, tells his mom, who sees the UFO moving away. Most interestingly, his head cold is gone. She calls the doctor immediately. He comes over, and the kid, Chuck Doyle, has wounds on his face where he fell, but his head cold is gone.
Huh.
Now, why would aliens come from, you know, their planet to cure a kid of his head cold? I don't know.
Well, they were also using him as a flash drive, apparently.
Yeah, it's a strange case, but interesting and typical in a number of ways, actually.
I noticed a couple of the cases on here, the people found out that they, I guess, had been abducted and ended up having kids. One was a woman who went on there and found out she'd had a girl. They had the girl there on the spaceship, and another one, I guess it was a guy. They brought a kid in, and he immediately knew that it was his kid.
Right.
So why would they be experimenting or wanting us to have kids with the aliens?
Right. It's one of their agendas. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. I was receiving this type of case, the hybrid baby case, I guess you would call it, before Bud Hopkins' book Intruders came out, which kind of clinched it. He was the first one to really put forth this theory that they're probably hybridizing with us. So I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I have cases like this too. And I included two in the book. I don't get a whole lot of these cases, but I do get them pretty regularly. I think the ETs have multiple agendas, and this is one of them. And again, it comes back to them being related to us in some way and them trying to improve their genetics. They're very interested in humans. They know more about the human body, I think, than we do, are able to cure all kinds of chronic diseases. And it's the first thing they always do, pretty generally speaking, and particularly with the Greys, is to examine people. So, yeah, it's definitely a very strong theme. I think the reason that they're doing it is to replenish the race. And this is exactly what these witnesses were told. One of the last chapter in the book, Kenneth, that was his only real conscious experience when he often had missing time, but he remembers being taken on board, and they actually told him face to face, you need to know why we contacted you, and here's why. Showed him his child, which made him really angry, actually. He's like, you have no right to do this. How could you? He's very upset with the ETs, but at the same time, he was also very attracted to his child. All these paternal instincts just came right on, flooding in, and he felt so bad because this child did not look human, and he was revolted, repulsed by it, and so all these conflicting feelings that really, really upset him, and the ETs didn't quite seem to understand, you know, our emotions or his, but told him, yeah, that this is why we contacted you.
At least they didn't give him a bill for child support.
No, and it's weird. You know, he's like, why me? You know, he has Crohn's disease. He has high blood pressure. Yikes. He smokes like a chimney. Not a great genetic specimen. He says, I'm like, you know, I don't know why they picked me. There's probably other healthier people.
It might be to see whether or not they can overcome those within the genetic structures.
My guess is it's not a problem. If they can cure cancer, which they have,
yeah.
and arthritis, and I can go on.
Wow.
That's probably not a problem.
Well, Kat, do you get a couple more questions, do you?
I do. So the first one comes from Cater, and he asks, what is the criteria an alien uses to choose which humans to implant?
Cater, God, I wish I knew the answer to that. I certainly looked and studied and analyzed and surveyed and tried to see some patterns, and there's not a whole lot of it's evenly divided between men and women. I couldn't find any geographical patterns. Abductions are slightly more common in what I would call UFO hotspots. It's definitely generational. If your parents have had a missing time, well, you just wait. It's probably going to happen to you, too.
If it hasn't already.
Yeah, that does seem to be a factor. But race, religion, education, none of that seems. One thing I did find was occupation, which is interesting, particularly with people who've had, you know, healing type of encounters. I noticed that those people were sometimes, not always, but, you know, often enough, like, wow, this is a pattern. They're the type of people who have an occupation that helps humanity in some way. And by that, I mean a social worker, such as John Hunter Gray, or an inventor like Nikola Tesla, who said he was in contact with ETs. But I know of a number of other cases involving inventors, doctors, entertainers, animal rights activists, this type of person, writers, dancers, entertainers.
Hello.
Police officers. That's a very loose pattern. It's not super strong.
Apart from my never having heard the Nikola Tesla being contacted aspect, maybe they should be aware, if they're listening to our show, that not only am I an actor and a writer, but I raise baby raccoons and possums and skunks.
So you're wanting to take a ride on a spaceship. Is that what?
I would be on that. That praying mantis, he'd be lucky if he didn't get a hug from me, cause apart from them being the cutest little bugs. And they'd be saying, you want to see our home planet? I'm like, yeah. Let me make sure my phone is charged. And
right?
Photos.
Yeah, I'm right in line with you. But be careful what you ask for, you know.
Exactly.
I say watch out for missing time. What other questions do we have?
Yes.
So the other one is from Cy, and he asks, what does Preston know about the Mercury Vortex engines?
Not a whole lot. You know, I can't say really speak to that. Certainly not my area of research. I know, you know, almost nothing about that.
Yeah, I had to ask him what they were because I have never heard the phrase before. Sometime we have to have Cy on to talk about these.
So, Barb, do you got any questions on this?
Well, in reading through the chapters, there seems to be kind of a thread, too. And that is, with the time travel issue and the fact that, you know, what it sounds like is they're trying to replenish their race. But if they can travel back through time, obviously there must be fixed points that they can't change because they could have fixed problems with their civilization by going back in time.
Right.
That might be why they are back in time.
My guess is time is not what we think it is, or the universe for that matter.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Arrival yet, people, go see Arrival.
Yeah, I'm guessing that going back in time doesn't necessarily change time. It just adds to it. Maybe another timeline, maybe an alternate reality.
Yep.
I don't know.
But, well, if you notice in a lot of the stories that you have, when people would have missing time, you know, and they would travel, then they would come back and look at their watch, and their watch would say one thing, but the regular clocks would be 2 hours different. So, I mean, it might stop the time on them or around them, but it doesn't stop the regular time from continuing on.
Right. Well, if they're taken into another dimension, or if there's an interdimensional aspect to this, time flows differently. I mean, this is, you know, verified by physics. I don't think time is what we think it is. From my understanding, it's a trick of perception for people who are, you know, bound to the physical plane. But if you know, I got really into out-of-body experiences and had a number of personal encounters with this, and going to the other side and into the heavenly realms and this type of thing. And time is different there. Time flows faster. I just don't think it's what we think it is. And certainly the ETs have this control over it to the point where it's, you know, almost paranormal. But I'm guessing it's technological or part of, you know, their own abilities, their mental abilities, particularly because they're, you know, so bound together in this communication with each other.
Well, from the chat room, Nyla wonders if you have any thoughts on deja vu, if that might be looking into a different time stream or timeline along those lines, or is that just a Matrix thing?
No, I think that's a great question. I've certainly experienced it quite a bit, and it's transformed into a full-blown precognitive vision. So I think that's often what it is. People go out of body every night. And they're able to travel into the past and into the future. Time kind of collapses, and they bring back, most people, only shreds of memory, and little incidents will happen in the day that they'll remember having experienced before. This can also relate to past lives, which I think is also undoubtedly true. The evidence for that is mind-blowing. There's no doubt that there's something going on there. I think deja vu in most cases, at least in my own personal experience, was kind of half-remembered precognitive dreams. We have these amazing abilities as humans that I think we've only begun to tap into. Precognition, levitation, teleportation, healing, all kinds of stuff like this, which the ETs, I think, are trying to wake up in us. And that's definitely one of the strong themes when a person is taken on board and they're given messages. It falls into three categories. One is usually warnings about disasters. Another is messages and information about alternative energy. People are shown the engine room and shown how it works and how to build a free energy motor. And the third is this, you know, psychic development or past lives or out-of-body experiences or some spiritual message of some kind. Those three areas are the main things that the ETs are talking about to people, and really, I think, speaks towards their agenda on our planet and why they're interested in us.
I wonder if anybody's had the foresight, considering Bird Girl in the chat room indicates, can anyone see the other past, present, or future time? It makes me wonder if anybody has the foresight enough when they're communicating with an alien the way Kevin was to ask them, are they linear or nonlinear, and is it sort of like the holographic universe theory?
These are great questions. I'm running through my mind trying to think of a case where people have, you know, asked about time or that sort of thing, and can't really come up with one. I'm sure that people have, you know, asked about it, but, you know, I don't know. If ETs experience time differently from us or not, or understand that we're having missing time, or how much they understand about us. There's some indication that they are baffled by our behavior in some ways. People will be taken on board and they're screaming in terror. The ETs don't understand why, or you become very emotional. They seem to be very interested.
They always choose the they should stop choosing the screamers and get people like us.
They test people's emotions as well. They'll put you in scenarios to test, you know, love or romance or various emotional states, nurturing instincts. People are often taken on board and told to hold the hybrid babies and nurture them, and that they need love, because apparently these grays are learning a little bit about love from us.
Well, now I noticed that you were saying how the aliens have been in contact with a lot of the governments from around the world. I noticed that also in one of the stories that you had called Encounter on a Navy Ship. I believe that was chapter 8. If you wanted to talk about that or go over it real quick, like one of the things is the government, anytime there's anything dealing with a UFO or an encounter, they always cover it up in a hurry. And yeah. You wonder why. I mean, they've got so much evidence. Why do they keep trying to squash it?
Oh, they're neck deep in it, especially the Navy. The upper aspects of the military know all about this, and it's still a top secret subject. We've got the ET technology and the bodies and free energy, and that's the reason we're covering it up, because it's an oil-based economy. These guys have control. They're not going to give it up without a fight. I think there's a very strong movement towards disclosure, and we're seeing it. But I looked for evidence of, you know, the encounter you're talking about from them, because this took place on the USS Valley Forge, you know, a big Navy ship. With a lot of soldiers on it, and there's no talk of the, you know, people seeing UFOs aboard the Valley Forge, except from this guy I talked to, who's an absolutely reputable witness, was in the Navy as an electronics specialist, part of the submarine hunter squadron, trained in aircraft recognition, and on this ship for some time in the Mediterranean. This was back in I think it was 1960, and saw these UFOs. And not just him, a bunch of people on the deck saw this. He actually ran down, got two pairs of binoculars, and as he's pulling them out, his friends are like, "Ah, I bet you think you've got rocks," because, you know, a bunch of them had bought binoculars or, you know, things at port and got ripped off, and they'd open their packages and it'd be rocks. Well, he pulls out these brand new binoculars and says, "No, you got to come on deck with me. There's UFOs." And most are like, "Eh." But he brings about a dozen people up to watch these very bright orange pulsating objects. And they're looking at them through binoculars. And these are the lights that can only be seen on directly. When you look away, you can't see them. So he knows they're unusual. He can estimate pretty much their distance. They're right over the horizon, he's thinking. Absolutely gigantic. And a lot of strange qualities about them. He goes below deck and decides to call the bridge. And they say, "What lights? You know, we don't see anything." He's like, "What? The lights right there." And they're like, "No, we don't see anything." And he hangs up in disgust, goes back on to the deck, still sees them. They're all there. It's been, you know, quite some time now. Goes back down, calls the bridge again, and says, "What are those lights? You know, got to know about these lights." And they're like, "Listen, we're damn busy up here. We can't talk now. You'll have to call us back." And he eventually does call him back and asks to speak to the guy he just spoke with. And they're like, "No, he's been shipped off on leave," which, you know, just doesn't happen when you're out in the middle of the Mediterranean. People are not taken away unless it's an absolute emergency. So that was weird. And also, there was nothing in the news sheet the next morning. There was no evidence in the log either. He asked about that. So they were covering it up. And it was very strange because the next day he's like, "God, you know, something else happened." He couldn't remember it. He just like, this experience was really bothering him because he felt like he was forgetting something about it. And he couldn't remember what it was. He went up on deck the next night. There was no UFOs. You know, the ship actually turned away from these objects eventually. And they left. But the next day, there was no sign of him, and he's getting ready to go to bed the next night when suddenly it floods into his mind, this weird dreamlike experience. He's not sure if it was a dream. He actually thinks it was recall of an actual event. He's not sure exactly how or when it happened. If it was during the sighting, he does not feel he has missing time. I personally think he may have, because he went to these people the next day. I mean, he was below deck, and he's opening his locker, and the same guys who was up on the deck with him watching the UFO made the same joke before. They're like, "Oh, what are you going to do? Open your box and find out you bought a bunch of rocks?" And he's like, what are you talking about? I opened this yesterday in the vernacular. See, remember, we saw a UFO, bunch of them. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, we didn't. They did not remember. It had been wiped from their minds. Not just one or two guys. Most of them. There was one or two guys he found which did remember seeing the UFOs, but most of them did not. How do you explain that?
Maybe somebody got to them to cover it up. No, you didn't see anything.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have made the rocks reference, probably.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they wouldn't remember. Yeah.
They did not remember. They didn't say, no, we can't talk about it, and we're scared. No, they honestly did not remember.
Huh.
And this upset him really bad. He's laying down in bed. You know, he's thinking about all of this. This experience floods back into his mind where he's taken on board. And he's shown the engine room. And these are human-looking guys. He thinks he's AWOL, just like the other guy, Kevin. This guy also allowed me to use his real name, Jim Kubelbeck, and thought he was AWOL. And they're like, no, we're here to talk to you about alternative energy sources and all the different sources of energy that are available on your planet and encouraging you to use them. And they talked to him about wind power and solar power and water power and all the different energy streams, including electromagnetism. And he found it really fascinating. He had this very long discussion with them. And they kept telling him, you know, the only thing that's stopping you guys is from using fossil fuels is your own limitations. If you remove your limitations and say you can do this, you know, if you tried, you'd be surprised at how much you can accomplish. And that a lot of these amazing inventions are right around the corner if we can only, you know, try and believe in it. And they showed him the engine room and showed him how it works. And it was a relatively simple thing involving electromagnetism, he said. So my guess is they contacted him for that same, here's that pattern again. Here's someone who can understand what they're talking about. He's an electronics expert, and they're trying to encourage him to not use fossil fuels and make electromagnetic engines. I'm guessing they're hovering over this Navy ship, and, you know, what are these guys doing? They could be using all these different energy sources and decided to take one of these guys up. And afterwards, you know, he's leaving the ship after this whole experience. He's leaving the Navy ship, and he's talking to his friends, and they're talking about the UFO they saw. And his friend pulls him aside and says, you know, not only did we see those UFOs, but I had the strangest dreams that night. And Jim didn't get a chance to talk to him what those dreams were, but he suspects it was something like what he experienced. He went home and kept his experience secret for many years, finally told his family about the whole thing. He says, you know, they told me how to build an engine. Maybe I should try. I'm like, yeah, do it. And he went to the hardware store and bought got a bicycle tire, he got some magnets, he got all this stuff together and spent the next couple of months building this perpetual motion device, which apparently worked. It wouldn't spin forever, but it spun for a very long time, weeks.
Now, it's obviously not officially a perpetual motion, but it'd be more like a closed loop system?
You know, he would know more about it than I would. Because I'm not an electronic specialist, so I couldn't really answer, you know, much more about what he built.
Was it able to provide, like, power to their home and such like that?
No. And he kind of joked about it. And he says, you know, probably people would laugh at me if I ever showed them it. And he was kind of a little bit embarrassed and coy about it and shy. I think he didn't want to be too, you know,
forthcoming about it. Tell him to go on a Shark Tank.
But what I did find interesting about it is he, like many of the witnesses, came away from his experience interested in these alternative areas. I mean, there was one guy who did channeling. That's the guy I was telling you about, Kenneth, who had the ET baby. He ended up giving like psychic readings to people. Another guy, he saw UFO, and after his experiences, he's become very interested in alternative healing. Another Kevin, he keeps telling everyone about, you know, the warnings of ecological disasters that are forthcoming, some of which he's seen. This guy, Jim Kubelbeck, became a dowser, a water dowser, and was actually really accurate and extremely effective and very popular, made a living at it for some years. So he's quite elderly now. trying to get in contact with him and having trouble. So not sure what's going on. But he was elderly when I talked to him a few years ago at least.
Well, you had our time's running on out, but before we have to stop, chapter 10, you had, it's called We Haven't Come to Harm You. And I guess this one guy had missing time, and his name was Kenneth, and he come to where he was being able to be a psychic, like you were saying, and help people and stuff. But you had something in there that they said, and it puzzled me. It said, don't drink the water. Is that physically don't drink the water, or don't believe what they're telling you?
No, physically. And this is something I've heard from other people, that our environment is in deep trouble. And this is something he saw. A number of these people have very vivid dreams of future catastrophes where the sky looks orange and the water is polluted and the highways are abandoned and cities are destroyed and this sort of thing. I'm guessing that this is scare tactics in some cases, and ETs are doing whatever they can to say, listen, you are on a path towards destruction and this could happen. I'm not sure if it's necessarily found in stone. But who knows? I mean, some of them say, oh, yeah, in Kevin's case, they're like, your destiny will be fulfilled. You've screwed up. This is going to happen. It's a very strong theme in UFOs. For that matter, it's a strong theme in near-death experiences of people who have had in psychics, Native American elders. And I'm just going to say it, mainstream science is pretty much confirmed. You know, we're having a lot of problems in that area, too. Everywhere you look for knowledge, it's the same message. So this environment issue is extremely important and probably our number one problem on Earth today.
Wow. Well, our population has grown so big. I mean, I know land-wise, we don't cover very much of the Earth, but I think the areas where we are overpopulated at has destroyed all of our resources, such as water. I mean, places have to truck in water just about to have good drinking water. Our infrastructure's so old, they don't want to have to tear everything up to redo it, which they really need to do. Think how old them lead pipes are. I mean, there's a lot of people that has a lot of physical problems just from drinking the water and different things like that. So it's right. Probably a good thing. Don't drink the water.
Well, they also have all the fluoride in the water, which is a known neural toxin.
Right. Well, the message the abductees, you know, the people who have onboard experiences are saying is that the world is going to be a different place. There's going to be a new age. There's going to be an era of peace. And we're all going to come together at some point because it's going to get really bad. There's going to be a real darkness there for a while and a lot of struggles. And hopefully, you know, we'll break through this and we're going to have open official contact. I think disclosure is coming. I can't imagine it's going to take, you know, that much longer. Can't be another lifetime. No, I think it's going to happen within our lifetime.
Yes.
And right when disclosure happens, as it's happening now, there's going to be open official contact. Which is practically happening now. I mean, they're already in contact with all the governments. It's just a matter of letting us know. And NASA has said as much. They're like, here's new planets. In 20 years, we'll have proof of ETs. What they're saying is, in 20 years, we'll tell you what we know.
Mm-hmm.
If you read between the lines.
Much.
So, yeah, it's an exciting future. I think we're going to see these ETs. And the only thing that's really stopping it right now is our warlike ways, our prejudice, our difficulties with race, religion, and politics, which they won't discuss.
And that's what we end up needing to get straightened out. Just learn to live with everybody, you know?
It's so simple. Love. You know, one word cures it all.
That's it. Well, our time has dwindled right on out. Did we have any other questions from the chat room?
Not for me.
Okay. Barbara, you got anything, questions or anything before we start wrapping up?
No, nothing will take an hour or two.
It would take an hour or two. Jeff, you got anything else?
I've been fascinated. It's been one of our best shows we've had in a long time.
Well, Kat, anything?
No. Okay. Well, I had one question, but it would take too long again. We have to have him back on the show.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll work on that then. You got another book coming out soon?
Oh, you bet. Always. I've got books lined up.
Oh. Well, good. Let us know as soon as you get another one.
You got it. It won't be long.
Oh, I actually, considering you and I are both in California, and so is Barbara, then maybe the next show we could discuss California UFOs. Especially, I've been in Topanga Canyon. I didn't know there was UFOs up in Topanga.
Yeah, huge hotspot, a gigantic wave of sightings. Air Force Base UFO complex. Could talk about that. Oh, my God. The underwater UFOs, UFOs over LAX. Oh, my gosh. So much stuff.
Well, that mountain that's, I guess it's north of San Francisco.
Mount Shasta?
Yeah, Mount Shasta. Is that really an underground aliens in there?
Yeah, I think so.
There you go.
To put it simply, I mean, because it's not just one or two or three or four or five people. It's like more than a dozen and some really interesting corroborations between them. If it was, five, I'd be like, maybe not. But the accounts are piling up, and that's just people who've been taken underneath the mountain. Not all the people who've seen UFOs, which amounts into the hundreds,
And what's that island off the coast, Catalina? Isn't that supposed to be a hot spot out there or something like that, under base or something? Underwater?
You scooped me. That's my next book. How dare you? No, I can't talk about that right now. It's too much. Okay. Too much going on. It's a huge, huge, oh my God, that story. Wait till I, oh.
Well, I know Catalina is also haunted by ghosts, so I didn't know about UFOs. That's awesome.
Yeah, I knew about that. Yeah. Well,
mile for mile, it's got to be the busiest USO, unidentified submersible object.
Right, submersible.
Area in the world, I'm guessing. Puerto Rico is huge, but this area, oh my God. Incredible. Well,
Preston, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us tonight. Great show. Of course, we always want to get you back. What we want to do is give out all your information where people can get in contact with you, follow you, get your books, and then we want you to stay on until after we're off, and we'll talk with you for a few minutes.
All right. Yeah, sure. Again, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. I had a blast. But, anyone who's listening, if they want to get a hold of me, please just Google my name. It'll take you right to my website. The actual address is prestondennett.weebly.com. I've got all my books there, excerpts. You can contact me through there. And I'd love to hear from people whether they've got a question or a story they want to share. And my books are also available at bookstores. You can find one. They're very rare now. And, online bookstores, certainly Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so on. But, thanks again. I love this stuff.
All right. Well, you're also on Facebook. Are you on Twitter?
I haven't learned Twitter yet. That's my next project.
Dope. It's easy. I've only got 16,500 followers myself.
Kat, why don't you give out our stuff?
Okay, so everyone, you can find us at theparanormalview.com for all information about our hosts and what we're up to. Also, don't forget, we'll be in Gettysburg April 21st through the 23rd, 2017, and we'll be doing a live broadcast of The Paranormal View at the historic Fairfield Inn, and you are welcome to join us in the live studio audience.
Hi. Well, again, we want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to our show. Great show. It will be up posted before long. You'll be able to listen to it. And until then, I'm going to jump off. Next week, we have Pamela Osley going to be on talking about aura colors. So just in time for St. Patrick's Day. So come and join us. Till then, this is Henry Foister.
Jeffrey Gould.
Barbara Duncan.
And Kat Cloco.
And we will see you next week at the same time. So good night, everybody.